Attaway, and this is Demise of the Podcast. This is my podcast where I discuss writing, and lately it's all been about my book, Demise of the Trinity. But today, I'm going to be talking about a few different things. I don't want to go into a lot of detail about Corona. I am working from home, and I'm going to be working from home until mid-May. And my classes were canceled for this semester, at least meeting in person. And I have a few other things going on behind the scenes. Grad school is going to take a little longer than I would have liked. Unfortunately, my program only offers three grad classes, only three a semester. And if you've already taken one, or you've already taken two, then you're just going to be left with one left to take. That's all neither here nor there. It's just something that's going on. So the bad news about that for me is that it's going to take a little longer for me to get my master's. And it will also mean that I have to pay out of pocket. So I'm really hoping that this whole Trump thing works out where he's giving everyone $1,000 or more, because I would immediately set that aside for school. Anyway, I write on Twitter about writer's block a little bit, and it's not really writer's block. It's just sort of this lack of motivation to write for me, because I have been writing poetry. I always kind of write poetry. I have not written a song like with lyrics and such in a few months. I'm not very satisfied with my singing voice, and I was listening to some of my old stuff. I've been listening to a lot of my old stuff lately because I've been acting as my own archivist and remastering a lot of stuff, and also recording new versions of old stuff and stuff in my old style. If you listen to the songs at the beginning of each intro, that's me. So I am a musician, as stated many times on this podcast, but the creative process for me lately has been very slow, whether it's music or writing or both. And this podcast is a once or twice a week thing for me. So it's where I get to sort of vent a little bit. And the whole thing about lack of motivation is that the only thing that I really want to write right now is something that I don't know what to do with. And that is a novella that I've been working on and off for the past few months. It's based on a screenplay I wrote back in 2015 for a class, it was sort of a creative writing class, but it also wasn't. It was taught by a creative writing professor, so she gave us a lot of creative projects, but it was actually a literature class, and it was under the guise of poetry. So we read exclusively poetry, yet I was able to write a screenplay for a final project. And I'm going to take a sip of my Coke, if you don't mind. How's everyone doing? The biggest bummer about wearing glasses is that they tend to fall apart after a few years, and you have to constantly clean them and be able to see. I record these at night, so I sound more like an idiot at night, which is why I rarely express my personal opinions on here, because if I don't think before I speak, it's not going to come out right. I'll probably offend someone without meaning to. And it could be something as simple as talking about traffic lights. You'll find a way to offend someone just by talking about red lights versus green lights and traffic etiquette. I once got into a slightly heated discussion in one of my college classes back in 2011 with a young lady who stated that she liked to tailgate people, And I immediately raised my hand. The professor saw the gleam in my eye, called on me, and I said, "I hate tailgaters." And we both agreed that the speed limit was adequate. Now, that's not a philosophy that I necessarily have now, because my wife has turned me into quite the road rage junkie. I'm not nearly as bad as her. I can tell you a story about her. We were driving to Alabama to see her mother. At the time, my wife was pregnant, and she's not pregnant anymore, and we don't have a child, so you know how that ends. But we were on the interstate that is between LaGrange and Alabama. We got behind a tow truck that pulled into the fast lane in front of my wife. My wife honks at this thing because it's actually going pretty slow. She can't get over because the car next to us is not going fast enough or slow enough for her to be able to get in the next lane. There are only two lanes. So she's stuck behind this tow truck. So she honks the horn. This tow truck actually brake checks her, slows down. So what she proceeds to do is lay on her horn for about 2 miles until we get to the exit. And the gentleman who pulled up next to us at the exit said, "Hey man, that's the best fucking thing I've ever seen." I had to hide my face, and my wife proceeded to wave her hand in the air, and they stared at each other, and that was awkward. That may not be a very good story. I don't know. I don't know what's a good story, because obviously I can't write a very good story. I write characters. I don't necessarily write plots. My favorite books don't really have plots. But my my novel, Demise of the Trinity, certainly has an end game in mind. It's a slightly dystopian, slightly apocalyptic novel, and it came out in February, and now we're all quarantined. Well, recommended quarantine. I've left the house a couple of times this week. We got groceries this week, and I think we're probably going to go to, we have a membership at Sam's Club and a membership at BJ's, and we're probably going to stock up some more stuff tomorrow or Saturday. But every store I've been in has had almost no toilet paper. They've actually had plenty of bottled water, no hand sanitizer to speak of. Walmart was out of meat, although they had plenty of chicken, as I've been told. A lot of canned goods are gone. People are reacting in a way that suggests that we are in end times, although I don't believe that we are. We're just taking precautions, and it's better to be safe than sorry. So if you're listening to this, please take care of yourself. Please stay in all that you can. I love staying in, but working from home and then staying at home, it does get me a little wary, or as Michael Scott would say, a little irie. Back to writer's block. I do not want to write the second part to this third novel. I actually wrote an outline for it, and I tried to make it less violent, if you can believe that. But the part one of this third novel, which is from Charles Price's perspective, is incredibly violent. It's incredibly sexual at times. There's drug abuse. Mind you, I've never done drugs, so that also worries me. There's a certain authenticity that I am unable to convey, so I have to fake it like any good writer. And the whole thing with Charles is that I try to humanize him, just like I do with Ken in my second novel. Now, they're both pieces of shit, but Charles doesn't start out that way. And I don't want to write the second part of this novel right now. I have an outline for it. I never write outlines, but I have an outline for it, and I'll probably change the outline. I'll probably change everything about it when I eventually get around to writing it. But I don't even know if I want to write another novel at this point. I mean, it's better to write one or two good novels than write a string of shitty novels, I believe. And there have been very few writers who have been able to pull off a steady stream of good novels. Now, on Twitter the other day, I said, would you rather have one good, great book, or would you have a stream of steady, or a stream of good books? And most people said they wanted the stream of novels to come out because they wanted the money. Now, as someone who has seven books, I can tell you there's not any money in it. It's I'm a best-selling author on Amazon for Demise of the Trinity, and it is embarrassing how much money I made. Now, you can say, well, you made it 99 cents, and you've given away a lot, you've done a lot of free giveaways. Still, it's not a lot. You couldn't even buy a week's worth of groceries with the money that I've made. I don't do it for the money. I maintain that the reason why I've even published this stuff is because I want people to read it. And someone actually got offended because they thought that I was suggesting that there was something wrong with wanting money. There's not. I would totally sell out in a heartbeat, but I'm not. I either don't have the opportunity or I'm not talented enough. And either is neither here nor there, because it doesn't matter. It's always about what hits the flint at the right moment. What gets struck by lightning at the right time, if you will. And it has to do with the hive mind and the zeitgeist and what have you. And right now, people may not want to read about apocalyptic things like dumb people going crazy because the internet goes out. You can tell I'm in a great mood. I'm going to take another sip of Coke. I don't want to write any more violent stuff. I want to write... I know this makes me sound stuffy as someone who has already written a novel that is inspired by American Psycho and Slaughterhouse-Five and Stephen King and what have you. I don't want to write novels about violence anymore. I don't want to have those thoughts, because ultimately they come from me, and it's a way of channeling that, but I don't have those thoughts as much anymore. I mean, I'm getting older. I'm not saying that I'm old. I'm only 28, but I am not in the peak of my testosterone anymore, and I don't let things bother me as much. I probably haven't been in a physical altercation since I was in high school, and that was just punching a friend of mine in the shoulder for pissing me off. That's the last time I remember, anyway. I don't even like the idea of spanking a child. I don't have it in me. Just writing these horrible things, like, it entertains me to a degree. I love Bret Easton Ellis. I love Tarantino. I love all that stuff. But after a while, when it comes out of you, it's different than when you consume it. And then you have to look at your own product and then look at the way other people look at it. And you have to ask yourself, what do I want to achieve in my lifetime? Do I want to be Bukowski? Do I want to be Bret Easton Ellis? Do I want to be Vonnegut? Do I want to be Chuck Palahniuk? You know, Chuck Palahniuk has made a career out of doing exactly what I tried to do in that novel, and that's pushed the boundaries and in terms of violence and the abject and transgressive fiction. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a time and place for everything. I wanted work on something else. And I don't want to say something more meaningful, but something more meaningful for me in terms of exploring what I can do by limiting myself, taking myself out of this sort of easy getaway of just making someone invincible or giving a character a gun to take care of their problems. I've never owned a gun, so I honestly wouldn't know. And yet I wrote a book where characters use guns. I had to do research. I fired guns, but many years ago. I play violent video games, but I don't do that a whole lot anymore either. I haven't been doing much of that, of anything lately, other than watching MasterChef with my wife and avoiding schoolwork, obviously. But it's difficult to talk about things like depression without sounding like a broken record. And my depression tends to come at night now. And I listen to a lot of other podcasts, and one of the podcasts that I listen to is Andy Richter's podcast, and he talks about depression. But he also talks about something that I never really thought about before, which is anhedonia, which is described as the inability to feel pleasure, not necessarily in a physical sense, but to mentally feel pleasure. And, you know, it's like looking at a sunset and just, you might as well be looking at a sand dune or a dying bird. These are weird analogies, I realize. I'm sitting here in front of this microphone, looking down, my eyes closed. I have to tell you, I feel that a lot. I do. The absence of feeling. And you can see how I came up with a character like Birch. Now, in my last podcast, I thought I was going to talk a lot more about Birch. I only ended up talking about him for about 5 or 6 minutes, which I guess was all that I could really talk about. And then I read the first half of Mount Venom. No one has tweeted at me to read the second part, so I assume that you all went out and bought it. But presently, I'm going to talk about Jason Thorne. Did I talk about him in another podcast? I know I've spoken about him, but not at length. And I certainly haven't read one of his chapters, because all of his chapters are in part two. And the whole thing about reading anything from part two is that it spoils everything. I mean, at this point, if you're listening to the podcast, this is episode 7. So if you haven't read the book or you haven't had it totally spoiled for you, well, then you need to stop here and go read the damn book. But Jason is interesting because he's not like the other characters. He's not motivated by a sense of vengeance like Ken Price. He's not motivated by wanting to be alone or depression like Birch. He's not crazy like Arthur. He's actually raised by a strong woman who is financially independent, although how she becomes financially independent is not, how do I put this? You ever see the movie Waitress? In the movie Waitress, this woman is struggling to get away from her abusive husband, and she goes through all this drama, and Andy Griffith is in this movie, and his character is rich, and in the end, he just gives her a lot of money, and that's her way out. And that's sort of Aroma Thorne's way out. She gives up being a detective and takes the money from Harley Froydlin, because, for one thing, there's nothing she can really do about Harley. He's too powerful. and she decides to keep the child. And in a sense, she probably couldn't have done anything about that either, because Harley wouldn't have let it happen, and Lucifer certainly wouldn't have let it happen. Although, all that takes place right around the time Lucifer dies, so it's likely that Lucifer doesn't even know about Jason, because Alan doesn't. And if Alan doesn't know about it, then Lucifer probably doesn't either. But Jason was born out of this idea for a character in what I originally wrote as a sequel. Yes, you can remove your jaw from the floor. I wrote a sequel for this novel, and I wrote the first draft in 2017. A lot of it was handwritten. It's actually a great way to draft, and then I would type it up, so it's sort of like a cheating way of getting a second draft. And I wrote a full fucking novel. So I've technically written four novels. Here's the thing, though. I'm never going to release it, because Jason is in this novel. I poached him from that when I rewrote part two of this novel last year. So you will never see the quote-unquote sequel to Demise of the Trinity, because it doesn't line up with the events. It doesn't line up with Mount Venom. Mount Venom has drastically limited me in what I can do after Demise of the Trinity, and the ending of Demise of the Trinity limits me as to what I can do after that, and it's best that I not visit the events that take place after Demise of the Trinity. How many movies have you seen that are just standalone movies that don't have sequels? How many books have you read that are just standalone books that have no connection to any other book and are just standalone books? There's something great about that, isn't there? You only needed one My Cousin Vinny. You only needed one Napoleon Dynamite, even though there is an animated series. You only needed one Citizen Kane. Unfortunately, we have three Godfathers. You could argue that the first two are the same movie, and part two is not a sequel, but alas, there's a need to create series rather than standalone books, and that all goes back to that question of, would you rather write one great book, or would you like to write several good books? And here's the honest truth. Most of the series out there, they don't remain consistent in quality. And that applies to even a series that I love like Star Wars. You can't expect to spread out all your ideas over several books and somehow keep it going with quality. And you also can't please everyone. And one of the arguments that was made about only writing one good book is that there are people who will still like it and still dislike it, rather. And I don't really give a shit, honestly. There's a certain amount of cultural cachet that can come from writing one great, excellent book. Even writers who wrote many novels, there's that one book, or a couple of books that people talk about. Sylvia Plath wrote one of my favorite novels, The Bell Jar. She only wrote one novel. J.D. Salinger. I'm not the biggest fan of Catcher in the Rye, but he set the stage for the coming-of-age novel in our postmodern world. Back to Jason. Poached him from the sequel, put him in part two. Here's the embarrassing truth about the sequel, and I'm going to drink more Coke. The sequel had three or four drafts. I tried more than once to write another part to Mount Venom, what happens afterward. And one of them involved this character named Jen, G-I-N-N. It's a take on J-I-N-N. Go Google that. He was going to have a white mask. It was more like a helmet. Sort of like Cobra Commander and G.I. Joe. Yeah, I love 1980s G.I. Joe. Love that movie. Didn't see much of the series, but I love the movie and I have the action figures. And I wanted to create a kind of a Darth Vader character, and that's one of the reasons why Jason has these powers that he kind of got from Hardly Freudlin. Of course, Hardly Freudlin is an antichrist, and he has a lot more power than what we even saw in Demise of the Trinity. One of the scenes involving Hardly displaying his power is he teleports Jason from Atlanta to New York, and he's not very good at it because he's using it for the first time, but he knows he can do it. And I've been talking for almost 30 minutes. The original plot with Jason was that he was the leader of a cult. He wore this mask to conceal his identity and intimidate people, kind of like Kylo Ren. And then turns out he wants to capture Birch. He wants to try and kill Birch. And at this point, Jason's not part of the Trinity. He protects himself with his power. And one of the things that I did when I rewrote him in part two of Demise of the Trinity, kind of dumbed him down a little bit in terms of what he could do with his power. And the way he dies in Demise of the Trinity, if you really think about it, he shouldn't have died. I mean, this is a guy who can squash a human being with his mind, which he unfortunately does to Aroma. By the way, my mom finished Demise of the Trinity, and one of the first things she said to me was, why did Jason kill Aroma? Maybe because she saw some of herself in Aroma, being a single mother with an only child, but Jason's definitely not based on me. If anything, Birch would be, but ugh, I don't want to be Birch either. I'm going to read from Jason's chapter here in a minute. I have to put my glasses on. I had to take them off a moment ago because they were smudged and they were bothering me. Harley looks at the screen while a helicopter encircles what used to be the Empire State Building. The telephone at his desk rings, yet he keeps looking at New York's latest Ground Zero. A man flies into the sight of the camera and approaches the news crew before striking the chopper, and the broadcast goes black. This is the worst thing that could happen right now, he mutters. Is that who's after you? I ask. Not exactly. They might come soon, though. It'd be a good idea to get out of Georgia, I say. Maybe out of the country. Letting out a dramatic sigh, enough to put my mom to shame, Harley leans back in his desk chair and turns to the window where Atlanta smiles back at him every day. I knew the name Hardly Freudlin, though didn't know what he looked like. Fonda is more prominent, and no one really thinks to Google the CEO of a major company. And that's how he probably prefers it. Within a day of knowing him, I understand why. He's charming, yet possesses the anxiety of a wounded mouse. I should have taken Ken's advice, he says. That person you saw on TV is Lucifer's son. He's about your age. Lucifer, I ask, like the devil? He's the reason I exist. I'm here to stop what he started in 1986. What happened in 1986? Central Network launched. They wanted to put the internet in every home so that Lucifer could control and brainwash humans one day. Well, as you know, humans are quite dependent on the internet. If they lost it, we'd fall as a society. But Lucifer never got a chance to act on his intended plan. Instead, he grew an antichrist. just not like the ones from the books. You believe all that? I ask. That's why you're the CEO of Fonda? Jason, I know all of that because God created me to perform these duties. I'm failing him right now. Lucifer found a loophole in God's law. It's a sin against God for Satan to directly harm humans. So he had regular men sell their souls for centuries until he finally made something real. That something was Murray Grown. Never heard of him, I say. Do you want to stop talking and leave now? Focusing on the TV, I break the screen and close the blinds so we're in the dark. If I have to protect him to save my own interest, I will force Harley out of this building. Even if there's an Antichrist rampaging through New York City, I have no obligation to anyone but Harley and myself. He needs to think of his own safety, regardless of whatever he believes. So Jason craves power, not in the sense of superpowers, I guess you could say, but he wants what Harley Freudlin has because he's never had it before. He doesn't want to hurt people, although he does. He wants to be rich. He wants to live in a house that's more than one floor. He wants to see places. And he spent his entire life in Mount Zion, Georgia, in this house with his mom and the one childhood friend he had. Well, if you read the book, you find out he used his superpowers, I guess you could say, to destroy that boy's house. And Jason really can't be faulted for that. I mean, if you gave an 8-year-old boy that kind of power, he's probably going to use it for bad things. There are not many kids in this world who have noble intentions. And just like Alan or Ken, Jason is 18 here and he doesn't have the emotional capacity to understand himself, so he certainly doesn't have the capacity to understand his power. And he helps the Trinity. He helps Birch and Arthur take out Alan. But then he sort of becomes an even bigger problem than Alan because, well, we've taken out the big threat and yet we have something waiting for us behind the curtain, and that something is Jason. So the way that Jason dies is kind of anticlimactic. It was the only way I could see ending things, though. He's a child at heart. So when Birch tries to kind of comfort him, and then they kill him by shooting him in the head from behind, it just shows Jason's greatest flaw, and that he wants to be ruthless. He doesn't have the heart to be ruthless. And if he'd lived, he would have regretted hurting his mother the way he did. And he probably would have tried to pull a Vegeta, as I like to say, and become good again. There's a more intelligent way to say that, but that's the only way I know how at this point. Jason is one of my favorite characters that I've ever written, and I did reduce his role significantly in that there isn't a sequel. He doesn't have his own book, but he serves his purpose well in this novel, and he kind of gives a glimpse into how Lucifer has a plan for every failure in this novel. And whether it's Alan resulting from Veronica, resulting from Allison and Murray, or Jason resulting from Harley Freudlin raping Aroma Thorne in order to display his power and get her to back off. It's just another way to show you that it's not a straight line of power. It's not a straightforward demise. It's like a grenade going off. And if Lucifer had remained active, if Birch hadn't gone to hell and killed him, he would have figured out another way to have a similar effect on the world. So, I am at 35 minutes in. I will read a little bit more, and then I'm going to end the sucker. But before I do that, another sip of Coke. Jason, this is the time. I'm supposed to do something, and I'm afraid that I just can't focus on my obligations with everything that's happening. I've never done this before, but I think I can manage. We're leaving now, I say. Not me, just you. A baseball bat hits me in the head, and there's a dark spot clouding my vision mixed with the strange colors and a sense of blood rushing through my nose. My body seems to fade in and out, yet I'm still in the room. Oh, he says, let me try it this way. Harley flings his fingertips towards me, and the pain forces me backward. Only I see the sky now. Smoke rises from beneath me. I pick myself off the ground, and there are dead men and burning cars all around me. The man I saw on the television looms through the air and into a building as if sawing through an old wide tree. My senses flicker as my vision, scent, hearing, and nerves can't grasp the reality surrounding me. This has been Patrick Attaway with Demise of the Podcast.